The U.S. healthcare system has evolved to emphasize many of the core principles of retail business, including convenience, customer service, and efficiency. These features are especially evident in ambulatory care. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Amber LaForgia, an assistant professor in the Management of Organizations group at the University of California, Berkeley Haas School of Business. Professor LaForgia has written a perspective article about the corporatization of ambulatory care as part of the journal series on the corporatization of U.S. healthcare. Professor LaForgia, what types of corporate entities have been active in ambulatory care markets in the United States, and what makes those markets appealing?
Much of ambulatory care has long been corporate. So, an example are retail clinics that first opened in the 2000s and chains of urgent care centers that started in the 1970s. But since then, I think what really has changed is the role of corporate entities, including big box chains, technology firms, financial firms like private equity, have expanded these models and in scale and scope. So, for example, famously, CVS took retail clinics mainstream, starting with a large acquisition in 2006. But more recent examples include Amazon's acquisition of the primary care chain One Medical. So, what makes ambulatory care appealing from a corporate perspective is that there's been a shift in patient perspectives towards this more consumer mindset, where there's a more emphasis on convenience. And so, to some extent, there could be perceived a missing market for care, for convenient types of care, in the sense that consumers want care potentially at home. They want care on their own time. They want care that they can schedule and walk into. And traditional healthcare settings haven't really provided that. And so, from the corporate perspective, if patients are willing to pay for that type of convenience, then it is a market that is worth entering and seeing what sorts of profits can be derived from that. Additionally, a lot of ambulatory care is more out of pocket. There are parts of dermatology and physical therapy and specialized services such as fertility services, which are largely out of pocket and so can be quite lucrative. Even services that some insurance covers, like eye surgeries, like cataract surgeries, can be perceived as quite lucrative because they're fairly standardized, routine, and high volume, and so they can be quite profitable.
And speaking of profits, how have those models affected healthcare spending overall?
One thing I could focus on is retail clinics and urgent care centers. So there's often this debate about, oh, are they going to potentially make care, overall healthcare spending go down because it's taking patients out of the emergency room, which is much more expensive. And so rather than going to get stitches in the emergency room, you can go get stitches at the urgent care center. So that could be a theory of which you would imagine that overall healthcare spending could go down. But alternatively, if a patient maybe would have not ever gone to any type of care and just stayed home, then if an urgent care center comes in and patients start using those services, that's new utilization that could increase overall healthcare spending. And generally, what research has found is that while there is some substitution away from the ER, there's also a large increase in new utilization of urgent care centers and retail clinics. And so overall, healthcare spending might be going up as a result of that new utilization. But it also suggests that there was an unmet need that patients wanted these services and they didn't have access to those services before.
So you've talked about the convenience premiums offered by retail clinics and urgent care centers. At the other end of the spectrum are concierge medical practices. What value do those practices offer patients, and what effects have they had on the healthcare system?
In my NEJM piece, I referred to this as the Equinox model of care because it's a fancy gym where you pay a high monthly or even yearly membership fee to get access to some premium services. And so the concierge medicine style is quite similar. It's where patients pay premium prices for personalized, exclusive, on-demand services. And so concierge medical practices typically charge annual membership fees in exchange for same-day appointments, longer visits, and 24/7 access to physicians. So from the patient perspective, You are paying for this access, for this convenience. And we haven't had much empirical research in this space, but one paper looked at what happened when independent primary care practices turned into concierge practices. And what they found is that the patients that chose to remain and go concierge were wealthier patients, but they were not different on their healthcare dimensions. Once they joined the concierge model, spending on their care did go up, but there wasn't any measurable improvement in quality. And so it doesn't seem that patients, and at least in this study, are getting higher quality, but they could still be getting a lot of value from concierge just from the time savings and the access to the physicians, which presumably these patients are valuing.
You mentioned dermatology and physical therapy, and you say in your article that the corporatization of those areas is perhaps the most controversial manifestation of this shift toward a retail ethos. What are the concerns associated with corporate influence in those areas in particular?
When it comes to more specialized office-based practices, traditionally they have been owned and operated by physicians. And the reason it's more controversial now is because the corporate entities that are most involved in this space are private equity firms. And there's been a lot of news and coverage around private equity firms and that their incentives are to generate profits as quickly as possible. And so the concerns would be that in entering these settings, they might be focusing more on doing more lucrative types of procedures or even shifting the types of procedures that are being performed by these types of practices in ways that might not be beneficial to patients. So an example could be maybe your dermatologist's practice gets acquired by a private equity firm and they start shifting towards doing much more cosmetic dermatology than clinical dermatology. And so you're now losing access to clinical dermatology, which in general, dermatology is an area where it can be quite difficult to get an appointment as a patient. And so that could be one way in which patients could be worse off. But in other ways, patients could potentially be better off if private equity firms, for example, can build new office locations, hire more highly trained staff that aren't necessarily dermatologists, but that can assist dermatologists in providing care such as biopsies and increasing, therefore, potential detection of cancer. And so there's still a lot we don't know about how private equity is positively or negatively impacting dermatology or physical therapy.
Finally, your own work has examined fertility clinics. What have you found about the effects of corporatization or consolidation in that market?
What we find in this setting runs counter to a lot of the narrative that we often hear around corporatization. And what we find is that when independent clinics are acquired by large corporate chains, there's actually a large improvement in quality, which we measure as the live birth rate per embryo transferred, which is the embryo created from the IVF procedure being transferred into the uterus. And that is leading to a 14% increase in the live birth rate following corporate acquisition. And we tested to see if these clinics were maybe just cherry picking easier patients as a way of increasing this live birth rate number. But our data showed that the patient mix did not change. Instead, what we find is evidence that these chains improved outcomes by standardizing IVF processes and procedures and using their resources and the clinical knowledge network formed from acquiring practices to increase knowledge sharing and establishing best practices that could help improve the quality of care. But fertility is very different than other areas of care because there are quality report cards available online, which allow patients to shop on these metrics of success, on these metrics of live birth rates. And because it's out of pocket and very expensive, patients are very informed consumers. And so these corporate chains might have stronger incentives to want to compete on quality by improving their success rates as a way of attracting patients. And these types of incentives might not exist in other markets like dialysis or nursing homes, where other papers have shown corporatization is negatively impacting quality in those spaces.
Thank you, Professor LaForgia.